Session number 10767, reel 11.
Mr. Joe Fitzpatrick, reel 11. About how long was it then? You got to the hospital in sort of late August. When was it that you went to ETAPS?
From Wimmera, I went to ETAPS.
And about what?
How long was it to say? Be about 7 or 8 days after I was wounded, and I had those few days at Wimmera, and then I was on my way to ETAPS.
What happened there then?
Someone called it ETAPLES, but it used to be known as the Bull Ring. And chaps that had misbehaved themselves, they took them to the Bull Ring and give them a light, good drilling and getting something knocked into them. But that didn't affect me in any shape or form. But there was a young officer there, and he said, "Go on, we'll have a game of rugby." I think he was a rugby fanatic, and passing the ball, and he got it once, and he come charging along, and he gave me a right knock, and I sat on my back, and I thought, "Oh, is this bloody rugby?" I said, "I've had enough." And he laughed. He says, "Oh, that's all right." I said. So eventually got on the train.
Was there any sign of unrest at ETAPS at that time? Because it's just before the mutiny. There was a mutiny in September, and you must have been there in.
Well, are you referring to the French?
No, it was a British mutiny at ETAPS.
Well, I never heard about any. I know the Cheshire had been in trouble at one period, but I never heard of the British having a mutiny.
So you saw no signs of...
No signs at all. But the French, they let us down very badly.
We'll come back to that. So when you were at ETAPS, there was no unrest at all amongst the troops?
No.
And how long...
Mind you, they'd have sooner been in somebody else, some other place than that if they could. But they just went about it as if like it was a job to be done.
Did you have any training while you were there?
No, we never did any training whatsoever.
No. And where did you go from there?
Well, just trying to think a minute. I go back to my battalion.
And were they still in the... They would still be at Ypres?
Still at Ypres. And the first thing that the quartermaster asked me at company headquarters, which was miles behind, I was getting rigged out again, he said, "What do you do with your revolver and binoculars and things and equipment?" I said, "Well," I said, "the first thing I did," I said, "I dumped them at the MOs at Philbox." I said... And he looked at me, I said, "I wasn't going to carry that all the way down to Ypres." I said, "Or wherever I was going to be sent to." "Oh, so he rigged me out again." See? I suppose he got to have a check whether we're lost in action or what. See? He could put that down if he wanted to. But I was a bit surprised, he seemed a bit upset about it. But
you went back to number one platoon A company, did you?
That's correct. Correct. A corporal would be doing my job while I was away.
Were they pleased to see you?
Oh, yes.
Was your leg fully fixed? Was it all right?
Oh, you can't tell there was anything wrong. But now it's all healed.
But then?
It's all healed up. You couldn't tell whether it was there or not.
But then was it fully healed?
Oh, yes. It broke the skin, you see. And I've often wondered whether some of the dirt had got in it and gone down my leg, you know, and got stuck down there. I have an aching leg down again. But that, I put that down to varicose veins, really.
So what happened next, then?
I went on two courses.
Tell me about them, then. That was while you were at Epes, you went on courses.
Well, I went to this one. I know it was nice weather. And I was there nearly 3 weeks.
And where was that at?
And that was on the coast, Chateau something, not far from Wimmeroo, where Lord George used to go down again when it was peacetime.
And what was the course in?
It was about...
What was the course in?
I don't get you.
What were you doing?
There at the school. At the school. The school, well, it was a smashing place. We had a flat piece of ground where we went on parade, rifle and bayonet, and all their equipment on. And we used to loiter about, and then the bugler would go for the right-hand markers. They'd take positions. Then you'd get the command falling on the markers, and the band would play while he was marching to your position. And then the colonel in charge would have a little walk round and have a few words, and we touched on every subject there was.
So it was just a general revision?
On warfare, tanks, machine guns, Lewis guns, rifles, and every map reading, and we travelled, there was four of us, with a compass, and we'd got to go on a certain line, and as we come out of a wood about 3 to 4 miles away in the dark, we'd do it on the following up system, lining up, see, keeping in touch, don't wander away from the dead set course that you're on, you see. And we finished up 5 yards away from the exact spot where we should have done. So that was passed out all right. See, and we learnt all about map reading and numbers and whatnot and finding that this, that and the other. And it was very, very, very good indeed. So you see, I got experience again, see, in advance. There was nobody there less than the rank of sergeant. Company sergeant, majors, regimental, second lieutenants, lieutenants, majors, there. And you were in sections of 16 each. No, not there, we weren't. It was another one. It was a glass, more like an observatory, you know, with glass and that. You see, like, one day I'm sat in my bunk and I'm writing, and a voice shouted out, "Sergeant Fitzpatrick." So, here. So he said, "Sergeant here to see you." And it was one of my brother-in-laws, Jack Moore. He married my sister Fanny, and they had two daughters and a boy. And he was at Mons, and he was a cook. All cooks were more or less promoted to sergeant, and he was a real good chef, but he liked his beer, and we had a chat, so I went back with him, and I had a walk round the dumps there, and off a mile.
What, near Wimmeroo?
Yes, we walked round there, and the shells all there, stacked up, tons and tons of it, ready for going up the line, you see. And we had a good chat, and I said, "How did you know I was here?" He said, "Oh, Fanny had been to see your mum, and she wrote to him and told me that I was on a course somewhere." So he said, "I knew there was a course place here, school here." He said, and I guessed, and of course he found me.
Whose school was it? Who was running the school? Was it the division?
The army.
Or?
The army.
No, I mean, which part of the army?
Well, on the military side.
No, was it a divisional training school or a brigade?
No, a general school. From they had from all over. They had them from all over France. They'd come to have this course.
And what was the second?
You see, it was a good base job, and it was very good and all for those that weren't initiated with what was on their programme.
So what was the second course you went on? You said you went on two courses.
That was in, the second course was in November. And when I got there, I was a day late, and there were 16 sections, and the man in charge of that was a little fellow, I said, with his chest stuck out and black and red jersey on and whatnot. I said, and we'd a major and captain and lieutenant, and the rest were sergeant, and 16 of us, and he played hell. He said, you can't even get here on time. Well, we just winked at each other, you know, and let him have his say. And I don't think he'd smelt powder, the CFA instructor. But anyway, he said, you see that pennant in the next road, two or three places from us? So we all said, yes. He said, we've got to win that. That's for the best section. Well, for the competition, see? So he had a trick of saying, around me, nip. See? And we'd all run to him with our bayonets, and he'd put his hand to his throat, and he'd be nearly poking his head off, you know. And one man was a bit slippy, and one chap nearly nipped his nose up. So in future, he, around me, nip, and he held his hands out. He wasn't going to chant it again.
Now, where was this course at in November?
St. Paul.
And this was another general?
This was PT and bayonet fighting and physical training.
And what was this? What did you have to do to win the
pennant? If I'd have been in England, I would have had to go to Aldershot for it. And if I'd have passed out, I would have been entitled to wear a black and red jersey. But this was an extra course, you know, to keep you on your toes.
And what sort of exercise?
Well, we did a bit of bayonet fighting and all different things, you know, and running at a sack and poking it and pulling it out and running on, you know, and shouting. Well, I thought it was useless myself, because if you ever got in a funny position like that, you use your own common sense how you tackle it. So anyway. Near the end of the course, they had these competitions, and you had to run in your army boots. You see, you'd have shorts, like your short underpants and your singlet, and we're in across country, and I was in charge of my section, like, and it would be won it. And he grumbled because I was bringing two up, you see, and when I got within two officers, he was one holding each of my shoulders, and I was egging him on. And then we got within 100 yards, and they left me, they don't like how. So they were more or less faking. See? So any road, we won that. And then we did bayonet fighting and a little bit of musketry, you know. But it come to, there was a little hall there, with a platform, and he said, I've entered you for the boxing. Oh, I said, I can't fight. Oh, well, he said, you'll have to do. So I said, oh, will I? So I said, right. So the night came, and I went, and I got boxing against a sergeant about my own size and weight. So we both knew that there was a professional in our weight, see? Well, if you're going to book up against a fresh professional, against a raw-born amateur, you're in for a damn good punching. And he knew as well as I did. But he fell. I got him to fall in the trap. And we got going, and I poked him. I had a good left hand, and I could pick him up whenever I wanted to, in my own opinion. And this little instructor, he said, wonderful, wonderful. He thought he'd found a new Billy Wells or something like that. So I said, I can't go on again. He said, you'll have to do, see. So I said, I knew what I was doing. I said, yes. So another round, like, and first thing I did, give him a good poke on the nose, and his nose was running red and bleeding. And, of course, then he saw blood, and he come at me, and I covered up, and backing and ducking and whatnot. And, of course, at the finish, it was a draw, see? So we had another bout had to go, and then we went in the ring for a decider. So he said to me, now, don't forget, he said, you can win this. So I said, oh, no, I said, I'm beat down, he's better than me, see? And, of course, I said, right, well, first shot I got, I cracked at him with my right, and he moved his head, and I plonked him bang on the nose again. Blood was rolling, and he couldn't see anything but blood, and I backed and ducked and whatnot, and at the finish he just won. See, and he said to me, you bugger, you did it on me there. See? And the instructor played hell. You see, I should have gone on further, got extra points, you see. I said, I've obliged you by boxing, by going in. I said, if everybody did the same, I said, you'd be all a lot, you'd be in front now, see. But the next night he was up against this pro, and he went in the ring a minute before he was on his back. So, I had to laugh. But it was a real good school, and I liked it very much indeed. And we won the pennant. Very, very good. Of course, he'd be satisfied then he got the pennant.
Now, what was life like when you weren't on courses? What was happening in the Ypres sailing? Because the third Ypres, the Passchendaele offensive was on. What do you remember about the Battle of Ypres?
Well, we never advanced. We never went over the top. We only went in after they'd gone and held the line. That's all that we ever did.
What was it like?
I'm not going to put imaginary things in that we didn't do. You see, I'm telling you exactly what I did and what we did on that point. And we were never attacked. Only on the final one.
We'll come to that. How did the living conditions? What were the living conditions in the front line like when you were holding it at Ypres, as compared to what it had been before?
It's just the same. Just the same as when we were in front of Bethune. No difference.
Didn't the wet conditions affect things at all?
It was the worst place for mud. It was worse than Bethune for mud. It wouldn't take too long to move further back at Bethune and be on dry land, as you might say, than what you would do at Passchendaele, because you'd a few miles of mud to get through.
What was the mud like?
Well, it was churned up. If you went, I'll give you an imagination. A farmer had ploughed a field, and you went across crossways on it. You see, and it was tippling, thunderstorm going, and everything. It wouldn't be very comfortable, would it? And to imagine what it's like, there's one or two lovely big puddles to go through, and deep puddles to walk round. It took you a tidy while to cross that field. Well, that was what it was churned up, and the shallows were touching each other, ring a ring of roses. As I walked back to the MO's, got back to the MO's place through this pouring rain, you're covered in mud, you're dead beat, your feet are wet through. So it was the worst front of the lot.
But as regards
the routine was the same as when we first entered in the land of Bethune.
How deep was the mud, would you reckon? I mean,
well, I should say it come up to your knees.
Did you have duckboard tracks to go along? Or?
Well, you see, if you put duckboards down, so near to the front line and whatnot, you'd be doing that for the duration, because up in the air they'd go.
You mean they'd be blown up?
Yeah. Up in the air they'd go, but when you went further back towards the main road, you might come to a road that was made of planks, big, thick planks, knotted together, on the safe side, like on the other side of the hill, you'd find that.
People have said that the mud was so bad that you could drown in it. How do you feel about that?
Well, it was exhausted, and if you fell in 3 feet of water, you couldn't start doing the overarm stroke. You were absolutely buggered.
You mean that?
You swallow mud and all the lot, and you wouldn't come up again for three weeks.
But did you ever see that happen, or was that just how you...
No, imagined? I didn't see it, but you'd imagine it could be so. But there was, on one occasion, when we were at rest on the ramparts, my platoon, I used to take them up the line to do a lot of repair work, you know. And it was a bright morning, and we were marching up this plank road, left the Menin Road, and working up plank road to go further up towards the salient where this job should have been done, digging purposes. And the sun was shining right in your face. And all of a sudden, one of the chaps fell. So I went to him and had a good look at him. So I thought, oh dear. So when he came around, I said, are you all right? He said, no. I said, all right, you can find your way back, can't you? He said, yeah. So I said, right, so come on, get back. So I thought that was funny, that. I said, I think this fella's swinging it. So the next morning we got on the way again, and I'm just walking behind him. He didn't know that I was behind him. And he had his eyes on this sun, staring at this sun till it sent him dizzy. And when he'd been staring a good minute or so, I gave him such a push on the back. He turned round as if to say, what's that for? I said, keep your eyes on the bloody floor. Don't keep looking at that fella up there. So he didn't do it again. So you see what they do. It's funny, they think of all sorts of little things sometimes. It just depends on the individual.
What was morale like in the unit?
Oh?
Morale, what was it like in the 2nd 6th, in your company?
Well, I should say it was very, very good at that period. Well, at certain periods, especially when we're at Newport Baines.
No, but I mean at Epes. We're at Epes now.
I mean, oh, aye. Oh, well, at Ypres, yes, it was pretty fair. Pretty fair. I mean, say, you didn't give it a second thought.
Were there many cases like this bloke, malingering?
Oh, well, they do all sorts of tricks, you know.
Do you remember any of the other tricks?
Well, when we were at, on home service there.
At Ypres.
At Ypres, no. No, they might come trying some fantastical thing, you know, and then when they get as far as the end, we just say, oh, get back to your company. You always get that with the mass of men.
Did many of them seem to suffer, or did you suffer from the stress or nerves of it all?
Well, I was only a young fella. I felt sorry for some of them. I was only a young fella, and I was full-blooded, and... plenty of sport. When we came out of the line, we used to kick a ball about a bit.
So you weren't frightened at Ypres?
I wasn't frightened anywhere.
What about other people? Did they show their nerves at all?
I wouldn't say so.
Were there any cases of shells?
Mind you this, they would feel it inwardly, but they wouldn't really show it.
Were there any? Did you see any cases of shell shock?
No, only to say a lad had the Lewis gun team. They got more than shell shock. They got combustion. But only this lad that got the blast in his face. That left him very lucky to get away with as little as that.
But nobody actually seemed to be any signs of what they called shell shock?
No, no screaming or going do lally or anything like that.
You didn't see that?
No.
But there no self-inflicted wounds then in the Ypres or anywhere like that?
Not to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge. I mean, if a fella does that, you see, he gets corporal punishment and he'd probably find himself tied to the wheel.
But that didn't happen?
No, but they did tie them to the wheel for certain things, as I know of one chap that got tied to the wheels.
What was that for?
Well, he was in the PALS battalion. And one of my workmates knew him very well, and I knew him very well, but he didn't know me. And his name was Dickie Shawman. And he used to work at the CWS joinery factory in Lowbrough, Salford. And he used to walk from Moston. And before the war, he used to play for a team called Longfield. And two of his mates, nobles, their mother kept the Moston Hotel. And he played for Longfield, and they had a real good amateur team, and he was a good little inside left, was Dickie Shawman. And one day his company was out in a barn, a big barn, and he's brewing a cup of tea with his Dixie and a candle, and it tippled over and set fire to the barn and burned it out with all the equipment and everything. So of course he got corporal punishment. And for so many days, he would be tied to a limber wheel. He would be relieved for natural causes, of course. But he was tied there for every Tom, Dick and Harry to see, which was a little degrading.
Were there any examples of that in your own ballet?
No, not in our lot. No.
Now, Ypres wasn't a quiet sector at all. Was there a lot more noticeable activity?
The reason why they called activity was that at Elfire Corner, it was a crossroads, see? And certain marks and tapes, the Rattans used to come up with the mules and then take the different directions to take the rations up, see? Well, Jerry used to always shell it of an evening and blow it all up. See, that's why it got the name of Elfire Corner.
Would that would happen to your rations, then?
Anybody.
Be getting hot rations in the
No, well, you see, what they'd do, they'd scatter, wait for it dying down, and then they would proceed, because they knew very well that they'd fired a quota. And you can't keep on firing and firing with a gun, you know. It gets a little bit white hot.
So, but would you, the rations wouldn't be hot rations at Ypres, would they?
No. The cooks used to have a little bit of a bivvy, covered with a blanket, and they'd use charcoal or whatever it was. And as I used to pass our cook, I was like, I say, "How you going on, Bill?" "Oh, hello, Joe," right, and he'd be black face and red-rimmed eyes. It's terrible, you know.
But would they get you hot food?
Oh, yes. So it'd be warm, you know. Oh, yes, we didn't do too bad as regards that. We used to get, I tell you what we used to like sandbag puddings. Pudding.
And
that was dough rolling in a sandbag, you know. Like you do, and tied and boiled up, you see, with a few currants in or so and so, and you get a slice of that fill the hole up all right.
And the cookhouse would get that sort of thing up to you in the line at Ypres?
Yeah, well, yes, now and again. We'd have a birthday.